Hey guys, what's up? It's Vince. It's not Ben, like you're normally used to hearing. Don't freak out. What's going on here is this is going to be your bonus broadcast for the week. What happened was Jordan Morris, one half of Jordan Jesse Go, was in town to do some stand-up, and I wanted to get him on the broadcast, but all the other guys were at work. So instead of just not having him, I thought, why not do like a one-on-one sort of thing and then put that up as a bonus episode, right? Look, you don't have to listen to it if you don't want to, but it should be pretty good. You know, we talk about some movies, about podcasting, and about life. So I hope you enjoy that. The levels might be a little weird right just at the beginning, like for the first 30 seconds to a minute before we got everything evened out, because I'm recording on my computer and not Ben's like we're used to. Although, if you listen to the broadcast, you're probably used to some crappy audio by now, and we appreciate that about you, that you're willing to let us rape your ears every week. So here it is, me chilling out with Jordan Morris, talking in my living room. Enjoy.
Welcome.
Thank you. This is nice. This is more intimate, kind of Charlie Rose style, which is what I prefer.
This is not our usual frat quarters for the broadcast. This is my actual living room. We used to record in my actual house, but now we've moved to much more studio space. And this, you know, I had to put my dog in the bedroom so it wouldn't attack you. But
this is like the roots of podcasting. Like, I know it's becoming, you know, like a more, you know, professional medium, and, you know, dudes are moving into studios from the garage, but this is fucking like bare bones. This is punk rock.
We reject all of that professionalism.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. But this is like, you know, the Foo Fighters playing a little like dive bar when they're in town to play the arena.
Right. Well, it's more like a dive bar band playing at the dive bar.
Right.
Yeah.
Playing at a slightly divier, slightly worse dive bar.
You have to do something other than slum before you can go back to slumming. Otherwise, gotcha. It's just, you know, that's just your normal. It's just our normal existence.
But this is nice. Yeah, this is the roots of podcasting. Just two dudes in a living room shooting the shit.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I like where this is going. Getting back to it. Even got the candle on, but that was because my dog was farting a lot earlier.
Okay.
And I just felt bad making you come into this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for prepping the room for dog farts.
Yeah. Well, trying to neutralize them. Doing what I can.
Nice. So it's a lovely candle.
Oh, thank you. So now, Jordan.
Yes.
We met on the grid.
Yeah, we were kind of ships passing in the night on IFC's The Grid. I would always come in to shoot my segments as you were wrapping up your segments.
Which were, you know, not very good, I'll admit.
I thought you did a fine job on The Grid.
That was actually
Your segment on The Grid was the first time I heard about Birdemic.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I don't know if I can take credit for Birdemic, but I'm glad that someone heard about it from me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I've since then enjoyed Birdemic many times.
Really?
Oh yeah.
How many times have you seen Birdemic?
I've seen Birdemic once by itself, and then once with Riff Tracks, which is the guys from Mystery Science Theater who will record.
I saw the poster for that in the theater lobby the other day.
Yeah, and then I went to kind of this expose of Riff Track or of Birdemic done by How Did This Get Made?
Oh, right, yeah. That's Paul Scheer's.
Paul Scheer's podcast that talks about bad movies. Mm-hmm. And I saw them kind of dissect various scenes, and then the lead actress from Birdemic came on stage.
What is it? Chelsea? What's her name again? Stacey? Chelsea? Something.
I don't know. She came off great, though.
Yeah.
She really, like, you know, she really understood what it was. She didn't have any illusions about it being a great movie. Like, she understood why people liked it. You know, she's like, listen, I graduated high school. I answered a Craigslist ad.
Yeah.
And then I was in one of the worst movies of all time.
Oh, the behind-the-scenes stuff on that is amazing. Like, I've seen bits and pieces of it. This guy Bobby Hacker made, like, a behind-the-scenes documentary about Birdemic, and there's this one scene, I think I might have posted it, I can't remember, but there's one scene where James Wan, the director, is giving a press conference, and it's out on a beach, and it's him, and he's got his fake stuffed crow, and then there's just no one around for like miles and miles, and yeah, if you've met James, he's a character. And then there's also the other guy in the movie, Alan Baugh. It's funny because the actress, she definitely seems like she knew like what was going on. And
yeah, and she comes off well. Like, she doesn't seem like it. Like, everyone else in the movie just seems like, you know, they range from like amateur to person with mental illness.
Yeah.
Like, but she seems like, oh, she could actually be talented and, you know, given a good director and script, she would be a good actress.
Yeah. The lead actor, Alan, is really funny because he's, I guess he's on the spectrum of, like, maybe this guy's mentally ill.
A little autistic, just, perhaps.
Yeah, he's got that a little bit, yeah, he's just very aloof, and you're not sure what's going on, but he's also really funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Anyway.
I saw, speaking of kind of cult bad movies, I got to see The Room in L.A. with Tommy Wiseau introducing, and he said one of the funniest things I've ever heard a human say, and I think it is a point for Tommy Wiseau as brilliant performance artist, who's putting one over on us. He does little Q&As before the movie, and someone asked him, "Oh, do you ever see The Room going to Broadway?" And he's like, I don't know, man. I can't see the future. I mean, I'm not Santa Claus."
Yeah, well, that is one of Santa Claus's powers.
To see the future.
Yeah.
I guess it depends
on your culture, I think, doesn't it? What Santa Claus's powers are?
I guess there are some weird European cultures where, like, you know, Santa is accompanied by the Krampus, and the Krampus is a demon that beats you if you're bad.
Right.
And sometimes Santa rides in a sleigh pulled by black men.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, maybe whatever weird country Tommy Wiseau is from, Santa is a, like, telekinetic.
What country is he from, anyway?
I don't know. I've never read anything or seen anything that's, like, unpacked his past.
You just assume he's from some deep, dark area of the Balkans and...
Yeah, some sort of war-torn bunker, like he grew up in a, you know... some sort of irrigation ditch, always hiding from secret police.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely some ethnic cleansing going on in his village.
Yeah.
He actually had a store up here where he, like, sold jeans, I think.
Okay.
I think it's over on Fisherman's Wharf. One of my comic friends used to work for Tommy Wiseau at this place over on Fisherman's Wharf where there's, like, a giant pair of jeans.
So he just sells, like, bootleg Jordaches, and he just got rich?
I think so. Well, that's how...
That's so funny.
That's how Mr. Brainwash started, wasn't it?
Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he was selling secondhand clothes or something, and then...
Oh, God. And I don't know.
Maybe there's a jean... There's a connection between jeans and just being really,
right,
you know, cult art.
Yeah, right. Yeah, being a weird outsider artist and fake Prada purses.
Right. All right, so I wanted to ask you, you guys are definitely the tip of the podcast spear, sort of. I don't want to say pioneers, but, you know, you guys are...
I think here's a good way to mark kind of when we came into podcasting. Like, when we started podcasting, the only podcasts were either Mac Tips or Harry Potter fan fiction.
Wow.
And
that's a broad range.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe the idea of doing a comedy podcast or a podcast with comedians was kind of novel. Mm-hmm. I mean, now it's the only podcast.
Right.
But when we were there, it's like, oh, this isn't Mac Tips or Harry Potter fan fiction. How novel.
And you and Jesse Thorne, you guys went to UC Santa Cruz together.
We did, yeah, yeah. And we did a show that is very similar to our podcast on the college radio station,
okay.
KZSC 88.1 FM, the Heavyweight 88.
You guys definitely, you can tell if you listen to Jordan Jesse Go and then you listen to the Film Drunk Frotcast, that's an easy way to tell the difference between people who've been doing radio for a while and have, like, pleasing radio voices between and just us, where I think my co-host Brendan has the nicest voice, but the rest of us, we do not have the golden throat. Like Jesse has a great radio voice.
He does, terrific radio voice.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of skate by on sounding a little bit like David Cross.
Yeah, well, you also have the thing where you have you provide a counterbalance where you don't sound the same as...
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You get, like, the frequency difference going on.
I feel like that's... When I enter into a lot of podcasts, there's always a little barrier because the host kind of sounds similar.
Yeah.
And I think that happens because, you know, friends get into podcasting together, and friends always kind of adopt each other's vocal quality.
That's... You pretty much described the Frotcast to a T, where, I mean, like, I liked... We started it with... four guys that we all knew each other really well, and I like the vibe of, like, we're all really comfortable with each other, and it's not, you know, if you get, sometimes you get, like, two comics together, it just sounds like they're trying to impress each other the whole time.
Sure,
whereas,
sure.
Whereas it's nice when people are sort
joking
of,
about people that you know.
Yeah.
And not filling the audience in on who you're talking about.
Yeah, but sure. Yeah, there's definitely, I definitely get emails all the time of people like, oh, I couldn't tell you guys apart for the first 20.
Have you thought about maybe just artificially adopting an accent?
That's a good idea. We tried maybe the fake mustaches, but we realized it didn't come through on the audio. Unfortunately,
that's too bad. Maybe just a general Tommy Wiseau foreigner voice.
Okay, we could do they could do a character.
Mm-hmm.
I always find that interesting. That was an old morning show thing where they'd have one guy who'd be on the show for like 10 years and he had a shtick for the entire time.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember. I think I want to say. I don't think it was Bubble the Love Sponge. Anyway, this is not that interesting. Me not remembering who.
Various morning drive time DJs.
Yeah, Boomer and the Kitty Cat.
Yeah.
So you guys, what was Santa Cruz like for you guys?
Santa Cruz is, I mean, being a Bay Area person, you probably know the stereotype of Santa Cruz, which is, you know, if you go there, it's still the 60s. It's mm-hmm. a fucking hippie, hacky sack, bong, fish fest 24/7. Yeah, I mean, it really does.
I love the town. I used to go there.
Oh, is it?
I still do.
It's great. You grew up here.
I grew up in the Central Valley, in Fresno County. And we used to, actually, every summer we would go, you know, because we desperately needed to get to the coast. And we'd go usually to Santa Cruz for a week or two in the summer.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I gather it is to people from Northern California. It's like mm-hmm. that place you go for a weekend or, you know,
right.
somebody has a beach house and you do a little summer vacay there. But I really liked it. I grew up in Orange County, mm-hmm. Which is south of L.A. And, you know, it's the only place in California that goes conservative during elections. And, you know,
Fresno's the other one.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay, well, there you go. Yeah. We're both from our various conservative outliers in mm-hmm. California. So Santa Cruz was just this total 180 for me. I really loved it. I'm like, bong stores and jam bands and a black person.
It seems like
there was one. He was amazing.
What was his name?
We just yelled black person and high-fived him. And,
oh, all right.
And we apologized for what our race had done.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, there was a class on that, I think.
Right. And he would come to the front of the class and we would all just profusely apologize.
You'd line up.
White Guilt 101.
Right, right. Now they just say you get an iPhone app and you get that out of the way.
Oh, nice. So you can do that all mobily.
Yeah, but that's the thing about the White Guilt iPhone app is that it's made by Chinese slave labor.
Oh, boy. So you have to get a separate app.
You know, every solution comes with more problems.
But I liked it, and it was fun. Like, it was fun getting to do, you know, kind of getting to figure shit out on college radio, mm-hmm. you know. Have you seen this was going around the internet the other day? It's some kids in high school, and they did a like Gangnam Style parody.
Uh huh. Oh, I did. Yeah,
and it's
about
their school, and they use their school mascot. I think it's called like Cougar Style or Spartan Style or something like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah, they replace Gangnam with whatever their mascot mm-hmm. is. Anyways, and it's this, you know, and they're all trying to be funny and they're all goofing around, and of course it's the most ridiculous thing in the world, but. I was just thinking the other day how nice it was to be able to, like, attempt comedy in a safe space that isn't around on the internet forever.
Right.
You know, like, I'm sure if you listen to some of those old college radio episodes, we are probably the most obnoxious boobs you'd ever met in your life. But, so it was nice to be able to, like, you know, get good at that. In a space where nobody's really listening, like you know, our friends were listening, and like weird Santa Cruz townies who were tuning in for the conspiracy theory show that came on after us.
Oh wow, you had one of those.
Yeah. Oh, totally. This guy named Bob DeBolt hosted it, and he lived in the woods.
Okay.
And they let community members come in and do shows, and mm-hmm. he would like come in every day just reeking of the forest with like weird sacks of food.
I never knew what the forest smelled like until he showed up.
Yeah, apparently mm-hmm. the forest really stinks.
Okay.
A lot of BO in the forest. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, it was nice to have that kind of nebulous zone where we could kind of try and be funny. So I think we probably got out of college a little funnier than when we went into it.
Yeah. I mean, even now it's you know, just among people doing comedy, I think I don't know if anybody knows the right way to go, because I mean, there's two schools of thought. One is that you just put everything on the web, and like any publicity is good publicity. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of have the thing where I don't want to put my bad sets online. I want to I want to like put just small chunks.
Sure.
Or even if it's a good set, I don't want to put like a good 20-30 minute set online, and then people come see me and they're like, dude, you just did the same thing that I just watched on YouTube, you know?
Right. I think there's certain venues where, you know, half-baked material is more accepted. I mean, I think Twitter's great for that. You know, right. I think people don't judge you too harshly if you do a kind of a corny or a bad tweet.
Yeah.
You know,
but you do get the occasional response on that, on those too.
Right, right, for sure. But I think, yeah, it's probably just the form of it is Twitter is just kind of, it's understood that it's a place where you can kind of fuck around a little bit more. But yeah, I agree. I think if someone put up a bad YouTube video, I would be more judgmental of them.
Yeah. Yeah, every once in a while I'll tweet out something that I think is funny, and then someone will come back with, oh man, you're really trying too hard on that one.
Oh God. That's a weird little culture on the internet when they call you out for trying.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, the other day I had someone on Film Drunk Week. I have a commenter who's really funny, who's a really funny writer, who's actually like a lawyer somewhere, but he has this just intense Kevin Smith hatred.
Oh, okay.
So whenever something Kevin Smith related comes up, I kind of want to let him write it, just because I don't even really hate Kevin Smith. I just think it's funny how much this guy hates Kevin Smith.
Right.
But then all the ardent Kevin Smith fans are very, very passionate about how much they dislike his dislike.
Yeah, Kevin Smith, like, really, for a guy who makes such whatever movies, like, he really inspires passions in both directions.
Yeah. And I was just thinking of that because all half of their comments were, oh, this is trying too hard. And the guy's like, oh, of course Kevin Smith fans would bash someone for trying hard.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You should just diarrhea out your first draft and film it and not edit anything and put all your friends in the movie. Yeah.
Oh, Sandler's way worse. I think Sandler's the king of that these days.
He definitely is. Yeah. There's definitely a, you know, frat house. Right, it does seem like just all either your buddies from high school or your buddies from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a nice mix.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of their charms. And I think those, you know, what did I rewatch the other day? Or not rewatch, for the first time I watched You Can't Mess with the Zohan, because people were telling me that that's the good late period Sandler movie.
Is it any good? I still haven't seen it. I know Robert Smigel was like one of the screenwriters.
Yeah,
on it, right?
I mean,
and
I
Judd Apatow.
And
too.
Judd Apatow, yeah. I mean, there's some fucking Smigel shit in it that you can really tell. I mean, I love him. I mean, if I could have a career for myself, it would be his.
Right.
No question. For people who don't know, Robert Smigel was a big writer on SNL, and then he went to Conan, and he was Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. There's some hilarious shit in it. It's a mess like other – the plot is a mess. There's like eight endings and eight different villains. But there's some big laughs in it, but kind of between the big laughs, it's being an insufferable mess.
It's weird because, like, I go back to, you know, Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, and the plot of those is a mess, but that somehow it's still funny and it works mostly.
Yeah,
I don't know if I was just young.
Here's what I think it is. I was watching Zohan and thinking a lot about Billy Madison while I was watching it. Uh-huh. Isn't this kind of the same thing? I think that in Billy Madison, there's a weird, crazy plot, but they didn't care about it. Like in the Zohans and the grown-ups of the world, there's these spaces where there aren't really jokes, you know? Like they're just doing this plot of – in Zohan, it's he's trying to save the hair salon that he works at from these developers.
Like they've forgotten that the plot is supposed to just be a skeleton for the other jokes.
Right, yeah. It's like, it seems like in Billy Madison, they, you know, Sandler and Norm MacDonald and Rob Schneider just, you know, got high in a room for 2 weeks and thought of all these jokes.
Yeah.
And then someone, maybe even a ghostwriter, came and cobbled together a plot around it. It seems like it was done the other way with Zohan and kind of those other Sandler movies, is they wrote this movie and then maybe they called in the Smigels and the Patton Oswalts of the world to like punch it up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I guess I would rather see a movie that's just a collection of jokes with a shitty plot than a shitty plot that's had jokes forced into it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it.
It's a matter of taste, I think. I think that you can debate that.
Well, there's some jokes. I mean, there's some movies that have a funny plot where some of the jokes aren't as funny, and there's other ones where the plot is totally second. Like, I thought I know people hate this movie, but I thought the plot of Hot Tub Time Machine was really like the joke itself.
I really like Hot Tub Time Machine.
I do too.
And I've rewatched that a couple times since the theater, and I laugh every time. I like the plot of that movie too. I like Cusack's journey in that. Mm-hmm. It seems like almost Cusack reflecting on his career.
And that's true.
It's scene. Like him realizing that all the characters he played in the 80s were insufferable assholes. I didn't even
think about that. Now I'm looking at it.
Look
in
at
a
it
whole
as Cusack
way.
Commenting on himself.
That's pretty good. I like that. I remember that and The Hangover were out at the same time. And The Hangover, I've always thought The Hangover was like this sort of bad movie that happened to have funny people in it, you know?
Sure. And I saw The Campaign recently, and I would say that of The Campaign, too. Yeah. Is that that's just kind of a whatever movie that happens to have comedy geniuses in it.
Yeah. Like, I think people like The Hangover because it was the first time they saw Zach Galifianakis,
sure.
You know?
Totally.
And then, but then Hot Tub Time Machine, I don't think, you know, I mean, I like Rob Corddry and Craig Robinson, but sure. I don't, it was not a lot of them saying funny lines. It's just this weird, crazy, funny story.
No, I mean, and you know, I think Corddry and Craig Robinson do the heavy lifting in that movie. I think everybody, you know, we can all agree.
Well, Crispin Glover with
Crispin Glover. Crispin Glover does some of the heavy lifting too, despite only having one arm. Both arms? Does he have both arms chopped off in that? Just one arm.
I think it's just one, and you're sort of waiting.
Oh, that's right, because he has to carry the suitcases.
Yeah, it's like the joke.
There's all these
of,
weird setups.
Yeah, you know he has the one arm in the future, and it's always,
But I agree with you. I think the plot of Hot Tub Time Machine is a lot of fun and kind of carries it when it's not being super hilarious.
Yeah, like you don't always have to care about the story, but sometimes the story itself is the joke sort of thing. Anyway, so you guys, all right.
Yeah.
I noticed that when people from Orange County move up to, you know, the Bay Area, whether it be Santa Cruz or up here, I feel like they either...
Do you consider Santa Cruz the Bay Area? Is that a faux pas?
I don't know. It's sort of...
It's nebulous.
It's sort of, you know, I consider it more the Central Coast than I do the Bay Area.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Like, I lump it in more with, like, Santa Barbara and that sort of thing than I do with, like, San Francisco. But I feel like it's the same thing where... People from San Diego or Orange County, when they come up to the Bay Area, they either like run away right away, or they end up staying for a while. And they either really get into it or they run away right away. It seems like.
Yeah, man, I really loved it. I mean, I remember growing up in Orange County. Like it was the mid-90s, so I was super into like punk rock and stuff. So I would always love it, you know, going to like Huntington Beach and going to the one bong store and buying a Misfits poster. You know, so it's like, oh, there's a town that's made of that. You know, there's the one bong store in the strip mall in Orange County.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I can live in a place where that's the town.
I can live in the bong store.
I can live. Yeah, I know, right? I can get a choker whenever I want to and, you know. And I can get the blacklight posters for everybody. So, yeah, that was totally, being kind of an arty kid growing up in Orange County without seeing a lot of that culture around, it was just, like, so exciting to be in a place where, you know.
Yeah, Orange County seems like a place where you sort of have to, like, totally pick. Like, you're either the arty kid or you're, like, super jock sort of, I don't know. I'm trying to describe Orange County from what I know of it, but it'd probably come off offensive to someone.
You don't want to offend the Orange County podcast listening lobby. I didn't have a bad time growing up in it. I just think I didn't know that there were other places that were cooler.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah, I think that's anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. It was like surprising to me when I got to places that were cool. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like I thought our relatives were all in you know, like the South, like they were in Beaumont, Texas, and, you know, Biloxi, Mississippi. So it's like, oh, when we visited them, it was like, oh, you've got the only place you guys have to hang out is the Outback Steakhouse. But in Orange County, it's like, well, we also have a Chili's. So we have two options. So it's better, you know.
Yeah. And Fresno is like, we'd go to Orange County. Like, holy shit, they have a Chili's?
This is, we only this have an Outback.
Amazing. Look at all these parking lots to hang out in.
So many parking lots.
This is, man, I've never seen strip malls this clean.
Yeah.
That's basically what we
thought. Right, yeah. So it's like, yeah, that coolness when you're growing up is super relative to just, like, what you're exposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would definitely be, like, tough for me to go back to a super, a super suburban environment now. But yeah, as a kid, like, people were like, oh, didn't you hate it? Didn't you just want to fucking get out of there? I'm like, I didn't know. Like, the mall had an arcade, and, you know, there was the one bong store.
Yeah, that's more forgivable. Like, people ask me about, and I thought the same thing about Reedley, which is outside of Fresno, and has, like, you know, you go there now, and you're like, you didn't realize that this was a shithole? I really didn't. I mean, I thought it was kind of all right. I don't know. Yeah. I thought everybody got drunk in the bathroom of Taco Bell because it's
in the bathroom of Taco Bell. That's great.
No, one night we did this thing where we drove around to each fast food place and we got drunk in the bathrooms there. Like, we did like a tour of fast food bathrooms.
That's like an awesome fucking suburban kid mischief time killing.
Right?
Thing.
I mean, like, we had to come up with some pretty creative ideas to have a good time.
You know,
and that was one of them.
I'll say this. This is what I really like about, and I think it's a quality you get when you grow up in a suburban environment, is that you know how to have fun anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really breeds a kind of person.
It breeds creativity, for sure.
Yeah,
right?
It's like, well, if there is just a Chili's in the place I'm in, like, we can go there and have a good time. Like, you're not going to shit on it the whole time that you're there. So
you're like MacGyver. You're like, all right, I got a Chili's, I got a 40, and I got 100 Piccolo Pete's.
How do I get drunk and a blowjob?
Yeah.
Piccolo Pete's. Oh, man, I totally had a lot of fun with Piccolo Pete's. The firework. Yeah,
you could hammer them, and you take the black powder out, and then you would make it into some sort of incendiary device.
Yeah, you dump it into a tennis ball. Hollow out a tennis ball.
Mm-hmm. We had
put a little fuse on the tennis ball.
We had the CO2 cartridges for paintball, which were made of metal, and you could poke a hole in the top, and then it would basically make a grenade. So
sure,
that was fun.
Totally. What we would do is we would buy those little Pinewood Derby cars and strap the baseless Piccolo Pete to the top and then have rocket car races.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that, too. That's more of a competitive, you know, you could take bets on it.
Yeah.
The options there.
But it's nice. Yeah, but you definitely encounter, like, that kind of person that did grow up somewhere cool, like Brooklyn or something, and they're like, oh, this gastropub doesn't have enough, you know, locally brewed ales.
They just, like, I think, I just imagine them practicing how to be more jaded.
Right. Yeah. It's like it's that person who has had a lot of stimulus in their life and, like, doesn't know how to just say fuck it, you know.
Yeah. Like, because I mean, everybody when they're 16, I mean, you're basically just trying really hard to be a jaded dick. But it's a lot easier to be a jaded dick when all you have is the Edwards Theater and, you know, like
Edwards,
like the slick track or whatever.
Sure, yeah, the mini golf place.
Yeah. But if you're the rec center. If you have New York City, like, you know, 20 minutes away.
Oh, totally. And New York is so great that everything does suck compared to it. So, you know, it's like, well, I get it. I get where you're coming from. Like, this place fucking rules, but, you know. Anyway.
So you guys, you and Jesse met just at the radio station? Was that?
No, like, you know, he's a year ahead of me, and he was my RA.
Oh, wow.
In college.
Oh, nice.
So we met in the dorms, and yeah, Jesse was on the improv group, which I also wanted to be on, and he was at the college radio station, which I also wanted to be on. So I kind of just tagged along after him for a while until I got to be in the things that I wanted to be a part of.
Well, at least you knew early on.
Yeah.
That's nice. I always envy people when they sort of knew what they were doing early on, even early on in college, because I didn't even think of stand-up as like a thing that people did until I was like 23 or 24.
It is weird when you got it. I mean, again, growing up in suburbia, like, you don't know any creative people. Like, you don't know a person who makes their living being creative, so it doesn't seem like an option.
It's like it was sort of like the way I would describe it is, like, I knew what a race car driver was.
Right.
I knew what a comedian was in the same way that I knew what, like, a race car driver was. I knew that was a thing that
yeah,
people did,
sure.
But I didn't know how a person went about getting into that or, like, you know, any of the, you know, where you start on the 1/8.
Yeah, like, as far as I knew growing up, it was like a patriarchal thing where it's like, well, you get to be a comedian if your dad was one.
Right.
So nobody tells you about open mics and writing samples and stuff like that.
Or maybe, I don't know, I've noticed another phenomenon, which is that most people, they just, They're like, oh, I could never do that stand up. And then they go and they watch open mic comedy for like, if you put anyone in front of more than an hour and a half of open mic comedy, by the end, they're like, dude, I could do at least better than half of these people.
Right.
And I've seen this phenomenon. There was the doorman at, I've seen multiple doormen for open mics eventually like become comedians because they were just like, I know I could be funnier than at least half of these people.
For sure.
Just because they had to sit through it all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I worked at a deli with a guy who was a comedian, and I started writing jokes for him, and that was like the first person that I knew that did comedy. And then at a certain point I was like, you know, maybe I should actually try this and not just
right be here slicing ham my whole life.
Well, yeah, that too. That too. But so you guys got into the college radio, and then at what point did the Max Fun and the Jordan Jesse Go become a thing?
Well, yeah, Jesse, after we graduated, I moved to LA to try and do TV stuff. Mm-hmm. And Jesse moved up to San Francisco, but he still drove down to Santa Cruz to do the radio show. So yeah, and he kept doing it, and then he started podcasting.
When it was
just Mac Tips and not Harry Potter fan fiction. Okay. The Harry Potter fan fiction had not come into it yet.
Yeah.
So yeah, so he kept doing it and then started podcasting, and then when he moved down to LA, we started doing Jordan Jesse Go. Just kind of pick up where we left off after I moved away.
Mm-hmm.
And that became Jordan Jesse Go, and that became Maximum Fun, the network.
And so that, and so you guys sort of run that on like sort of like a PBS model,
kind of. I mean, when you say you guys, I mean, it's definitely just Jesse. I don't have a lot to do with the day-to-day operations.
It's nice to have a guy that just knows what a podcast is before everybody.
It's the best. Yeah, I still know nothing technical about a podcast. Yeah. Like if you asked me to like download the proper software and buy the right mic, I could not.
Yeah.
Which is a mistake on my part. I should have learned more about it at this point. Anyways, I haven't. Fuck off. So he has Maximum Fun, and Jordan Jesse Go is a show on that network, and there's a ton of other cool ones. There's Stop Podcasting Yourself, which they do in Canada, and Throwing Shade, and My Brother and Me, and all these kind of cool shows. So yeah, so I think if people like the shows, you know, we do like a donation drive once mm-hmm. a year, and we also sell ads. So,
oh, do you?
So yeah, we have sponsors, oh, nice. And so kind of between the sponsors and the listener donations, that's where the money comes from.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing this about a year and a half mm-hmm. now, I think, and yeah, at first we started trying to get sponsors, and then this last month we did a live podcast out in Chicago.
Yeah.
And originally like it was all paid for, and then the funding fell through, so then we put it on Kickstarter, and then like we ended up getting way more money than we would have ever expected that we would get, just because we just sort of asked people. And I don't know, I'm not sure, like it's weird, like I sort of feel weird asking people, but then at the same time people that enjoy a show seem much more inclined to pay for all the entertainment you give them than it is to try and explain to people that are used to dealing with old media how a podcast works. And also there's like a new, I've noticed that there's a problem with the new media advertising. A lot of the ads that you do on a podcast, they're so easy to track that like you give people, you know,
pocketpussy.com/filmdrunk.
Right. And then
people know if it's a failure or not.
Exactly. Sure. But then at the same time, you're kind of like, well, that's not really how advertising works. Like it's right. my job to tell
yeah,
people
like
about
if
it.
There's
it's
a,
not my
if there's
job
a,
to make
if
them
there's
buy
a
it.
Commercial on during Revolution on NBC, like you don't have to go to Doritos.com/revolution.
It's like Pepsi.
And Doritos like not enough people are going to Doritos.com/revolution.
Exactly. It's like Pepsi and Coke do ads during the Super Bowl, and they're not like, oh man, how many people converted directly from that Super Bowl ad to buy a Coke?
It's exactly.
Like,
yeah. How many people put in the promo code Super Bowl?
Yeah, you do it to sort of keep your name out there in the world. You know?
Yeah, I mean, advertising and podcasting still has a long way to go. It's getting there.
Yeah.
It's infinitely better than when we first started. But it's going to take a while. Yeah, the advertising and new media is kind of still a...
Also, the thing that sucks about the internet, I mean, you guys were lucky because well, not lucky, you guys were smart, but yeah. You guys were in early, right before the shit. Like, the thing with internet is anytime a new medium comes out, there's like a period when there's people that are just sort of figuring it out, and then there's those people sort of become the big, like, sort of the major standouts of whatever that thing is, whether it's a website or podcasting. And then like a year later, it's just like everybody has one,
right? You know? For sure.
And so now it's like we sort of got into it after everybody already had a podcast, so it's kind of like, yeah, well, now what?
But yeah, there's definitely a flood. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a cool thing for comedians, definitely, because I think that I think it's a cool way. You know, it's a way to get people to your show out you know, at Zany's in Colorado that's not going on the local morning show. And, you know, and I think that people who are really internet savvy in general are, you know, a little brainier, so they're used to NPR and PBS. So I think that us as comics, we shouldn't feel too guilty about, you know, the once-in-a-while Kickstarter and ask for money, because I think that people, you know, I think that people are getting used to an entertainment landscape where the things that aren't network TV, they know they're going to have to pay a little more for, or it'll go away, you know?
Right.
So
that's cool.
But it's slow going for podcasts. I don't think we'll see our first podcast millionaire anytime soon, but yeah,
it seems like it's getting close. I mean, like Marin and,
maybe Marin's Carole a millionaire. Maybe Carole's a millionaire. Okay. Yeah. Maybe we have Joe Rogan.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, I mean, all the people, I guess, Marin would probably be the only one that's started as a podcast, and that's where, you know, that's where these other opportunities are coming from at this point.
But yeah, I think in a few years down the line, you know, the Pepsis and the Doritos and the Microsofts of the world will be...
Oh, they're going to be knocking down my door.
Oh, yeah. Beating them off with a stick.
I'm gonna be.
Although I said Microsoft Bing was our sponsor for a while, so maybe nice. I don't know. Maybe we're closer than I thought.
Do people? I mean, I don't know. Are they still a sponsor?
No, they are not still a sponsor.
Has anyone ever used Bing? I don't understand.
I will say
as someone who was
take this with a grain of salt.
Okay,
because Bing used to sign me a check every month. I think Bing is really great. It is my default thing when I open my browser. If you've ever had to search for a flight, Bing is the best way to search for a flight. Flights, movie times.
Okay.
And
are useful.
If you search for images of yourself, you'll get different stuff than with Google. So has a vanity application too.
Okay.
No, yeah, I think I think Bing is a cool service, and I will say that. And they have since pulled their sponsorship.
It's not one of those things where I'm like, I think this is bad. It's just one of those, like, this niche has already been filled.
I know. I mean, it's just another, like, we have that. Yeah. That exists.
Yeah.
And it's fine. But yeah, there's enough little bells and whistles. Anyway.
It's weird. I never understand the...
Please start sponsoring us again, Bing.
Not necessarily with Bing, but there's certain things where you're like, all right, that niche has already been filled long ago. Like, can you imagine being some guy who wants to bankroll a new energy drink?
Right.
And there's like a new energy drink every week.
Totally.
And it's like, what new are you going to bring to the energy drink game at this point?
Well, I mean, if you're 50 Cent, you bring your face on the can.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But then there's just random ones. Like, every time I turn on, I don't know if it's Spike or FX, there's NOS.
Oh,
NOS energy drink. And I'm like, what is different about this?
NOS comes in a plastic bottle. Oh, okay. So it's packaging differences.
All right.
And association with street racing.
Yeah, that's important in an energy drink.
Yeah. To be product placed in a Fast and Furious movie.
Right. So now one of the things that you do is you do a lot of interviewing of celebrities.
Yeah, you know, actually, I used to do a lot of that. I used to work for Fuel TV, which is a place you might see an energy drink ad.
Oh, that's probably where I have. I watch a lot of MMA, and so I have to watch the Fuel TV.
Do you actually watch a lot of
MMA?
I do.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are those of us out there who have graduate degrees and like MMA, believe it or not.
No, you know, I feel like I know. I mean, it does have the stereotype of being just meatheads only. But I know plenty of intelligent, like, dudes who are into sports who also like the sporting side of MMA.
Yeah.
I used to do interviews for Fuel TV for a long time. I did them for like 6 years. It was one of the first proper jobs I had when I moved to LA. But they recently canceled my show, which was kind of just a... you know, a catch-all dude variety show.
Yeah.
A real mansplosion.
Uh-huh, okay.
You know, brostertainment.
Explosion.
Yeah, explosion. A man-brosion.
Mm-hmm.
I added man and bro.
Oh, the man, word. That's the where the
marketing
money is.
Genius. But they recently canceled our show. By recently, I mean December of last year canceled our show because they want to do all MMA now.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Sorry, was that a sore subject?
No, not a sore subject at all. Happy to talk about it.
Yeah.
They were very kind to me for a number of years on Fuel TV.
Well, I managed to ask you about your canceled show and say that I like the thing that it got canceled for, which is
I have no ill will to MMA.
All right.
But why don't we go on Facebook and look at some of my old girlfriends and we can talk about how they're doing. Maybe look at some of their old boyfriends.
Yeah. I think a lot of them are probably doing pretty well.
Probably,
now.
Yeah. I didn't have Facebook for a long time. I only got it this year.
Mm-hmm.
And my high school girlfriend literally married to a jet pilot.
Wow. That's impressive.
So
you got to feel kind of good about that, though. I mean, there's two ways to feel about that.
What are the two ways? Bad.
You can feel bad because you're like, you feel bad because she's, you know, she married a jet pilot now. But then at the same time, you're like, she thinks she's good enough for a jet pilot, and yet she was still dating me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'll look at it like that now.
I'm not even a jet pilot. I'm just some dude, and she was dating me, and now she's dating a jet pilot.
Sure.
I could go get those girls that are dating jet pilots now.
Oh, yeah. I could maybe catch some girls who have had their hearts broken by jet pilots on the rebound.
Yeah, just underneath the... Yeah. So I was going to ask you about your celebrity interviewing just in terms of...
Oh, please,
like,
yeah.
What would you say the best interview you've done?
Well, mine were kind of weird. They did, like, junket interviews, you know, where you sit down in the hotel suite across from the celebrity for 4 minutes.
And you managed
have you ever done
make,
those for
I
film
have,
drunk?
And they're the worst ever. And that's why they're I was sort of impressed by the way that, you know, you tried hard to make them interesting, which is most people do not.
All my things had some sort of weird, like, bit or costume associated with it. I did one that was, like, playing blackjack with Jack Black. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I've been in a lot of, like, adult onesies and stuff like that. So, yeah, so they all had a weird bit or, you know, kind of... Yeah, angle to it. And you know, they wouldn't tell the celebrities about them ahead of time, which was something really cool about them. I guess if you watch them, you might think like, oh, this is a little sketch they planned out ahead of time. But it was pretty genuinely on the spot most of the time.
Really?
It was just them genuinely reacting to kind of me being a weirdo. And most of them, you know, played along. And if they didn't legitimately enjoy it, they kind of pretended to.
Mm-hmm. They're actors. They know yes and.
Always. Yeah, absolutely. There you go. They've all had at least Improv 101.
Yeah.
Here's the formula. And this was relayed to me by Paul Scheer. Mm-hmm. So I will not take credit for this. This is his formula. Mm-hmm. And I think it rings very true. C-list celebrities will go along with stuff because they're just happy to be on camera.
Mm-hmm.
They just like that there's cameras there and they will do whatever. A-list celebrities will do whatever because they know that they're famous. They know any things aren't going to make them not famous. And, you know, they just want to have fun because they're idle millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
It's the B-list celebrities that you have to look out for because they, you know, they know that they're teetering on, you know, the line between C and A, and are so worried about their image that they're the ones who are going to give you shit. And I think that's basically true across the board. Every time I had a problem with someone, mm-hmm. it was a B-list celebrity.
Of course.
I think the one A-list celebrity that was kind of a jerk to me was Vince Vaughn.
Really?
But I think he's probably just a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seems like his time is valuable. He does like one movie a year. And
sure.
He's like,
and he has to spend time getting fatter. So
that's
taking up most of his time, becoming puffy.
Vince Vaughn is my most famous photo meme on Film Drunk.
Oh, really?
I found a picture of him walking. I think he was just someone just a paparazzi shot of him eating an ice cream cone. And it's just like the perfect guy walking through the background of a frame. So for a long time, I would just like Photoshop Vince Vaughn eating an ice cream cone into the background of like every sort of banner picture I had to use. He's very close to my heart in that way.
It's like at the rap party of Swingers, him and Jon Favreau just got stung by a billion bees and have been getting slowly more swollen ever since.
It's a slow-acting
bee toxin.
Exactly. So he was kind of a jerk.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, really, like, the A-list celebrities, like the Denzel Washingtons of the world, were really nice and funny. And
funny you should say. I feel like I've heard bad things specifically about Denzel.
Oh, really? Yeah. I did a thing with him for that train movie, Unstoppable. Yeah. And it was one of the most fun of those I had ever done. Gave me a big fucking hug afterwards. Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
That's impressive.
So, yeah.
Because I heard he does not put up with bullshit, so he must have liked whatever you're doing.
Interesting. Maybe. I was in a little train conductor outfit, which maybe he enjoyed.
All right. Well, fair.
So, yeah. Yeah. Will Ferrell, always nice. Mark Wahlberg, always nice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, Kiefer Sutherland and Brendan Fraser were, like, dicks about it. I'm like, oh, you guys are, like, barely famous anymore.
How often would you always blame? Would you blame the bit when that didn't happen, or would you blame sort of the person? Or
yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I was real careful about the bits. I always tried to make them clear and about me. Like, yeah. I didn't want to make it like. I think when a lot of people want to do like funny entertainment coverage, their instinct is always like, oh, let's do slams against the celebrity. Like, let's think of slams about their career or personal life.
Which always works out great to someone that you just met like two minutes ago.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's like, yeah, right. It's like someone slamming you on Twitter who thinks they're like, oh, I'm just joking with them. It's like, no, you're just a random guy insulting me.
Yeah, you have to earn that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you can, like, a comic can be self-deprecating. You can't be them deprecating. You just seem like a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. I don't. It's hard to say. Sometimes maybe like the bit wasn't clear enough, where it seemed like it was making fun of them.
Yeah,
and I think they got defensive. But also, I think maybe they're just dicks,
right?
And probably, you know.
Did you read the thing about Jon Stewart having banned?
Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant.
Yes, yeah. I did. I read about that on Film Drunk, as a matter of fact.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Did you ever interview Hugh Grant?
No, I never had a Hugh Grant. It's so funny. I mean, I work for Fuel TV, and as we mentioned, it's, you know, dude stuff, MMA and motocross. So like anything rom-com related, I never got.
Hugh Grant is here at Sturgis to promote. Did you hear about the Morgans?
What was it like teaming up with super hottie Sarah Jessica Parker? Was she bangable? Yeah.
All these guys are crushing beer cans on their forehead.
Yeah. So the soundtrack has an exclusive song by Alanis Morissette. How fucking awesome is that? Yeah. So no, yeah, never Hugh Grant. But that seemed like he was a real dick. From that.
From what we heard about Jon Stewart, yeah. At the same time, like, I do always feel bad for celebrities that are on press tours because, yeah. I mean, the junkets that just the roundtable interviews that I've sat through are so awful. Even like, I mean, when I'm trying to have fun and not like slam them, but I'm sort of, you know, I always try to ask like fun questions. It works in like a one-on-one situation, but when you're in a round table with four really humorless people and you ask the funny question, it's like someone who does an asshole now.
Yeah, like someone who does a serious movie blog is probably a humorless guy.
Yeah. Oh, and a lot of the times they'll stick me in with like the college newspaper people.
Oh, God,
and, like,
really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like entertainment reporters can be... I really sympathize with celebrities in that situation and... You know, like, it seems like a trying thing is that, like, you have your Access Hollywood people who are fucking douchebags, who are actors are hard to deal with sometimes, but at least they, like, care about art and creativity. Like,
they want to be famous for something.
Right, exactly. They want to be famous for creativity or something. But, yeah, like, an entertainment reporter, that's just a person who wants a camera pointed at them.
Yeah.
So those, I think, are often the most insufferable people.
I want you to know who I am, but I'm not going to dance for you.
Right, yeah, exactly. I want to be around movie stars. So I think entertainment reporters are tough to deal with because they're, you know, fucking, they're fucking douchebags a lot of the times. And then, yeah... Excuse me. But yeah, no, I think that now that we're in a world where, you know, and present company very much accepted, because I think Film Drunk is a great site, but I think you have a lot of bloggers in there now who are like not professional and like autistic super nerds and like, so I think have those two groups that are difficult on their own. So I think when you do get an intelligent, actually talented person in there, it's probably a breath of fresh air.
There's been times where in my head I've written down like the five questions that I know this person has been asked 17 times that day.
Yeah.
And without fail, I'll hear them get asked those exact questions, like almost every time. So I don't know. Every once in a while, when people are dicks, I'm just like, well, maybe I would be a dick if I got asked the same uncreative question 1,700 times.
Yeah, I bet it's. But you don't want to do it. Yeah. You know. But if you are an actual actor, you probably just want to act, and you don't want to have to, like, you know, goof around with some stranger.
Yeah. Do you think that affects box office anymore? The press tour, like, is a press tour like a relic, or
I
is it?
I wonder.
Like,
it does seem like such a waste of money. I mean, yeah. I feel like I was, you know, I was flown out to some very nice locations to do those. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, just for 4 minutes on Fuel TV, it's like, what? Surely that you should have just bought a commercial for that,
right? What was the nicest place you ever got flown out to?
Rio de Janeiro for nice. Fast Five.
How long did you get to stay for?
A couple days, like 4 days. Oh, cool. They took us to a soccer game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it was, you were like doing a full-on tour. It wasn't just like, here's the time for the interview. It was like, we're going to take you around.
And yeah, sort of... and then it was like, we were there for 3 days, and it's like, okay, now's the junket, now that you've had this vacation. We went to a couple places and like did stand-ups, you know, like introduced the clips.
Oh,
like,
wow.
They took us to some nice vistas, so we were kind of working, but that was it. Yeah, London a couple of times, New York a lot. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
I never know.
But yes, I think you're right. I think it is a little bit of a relic. I think you should probably get your celebrities to do like Funny or Die videos. Mm-hmm. I think those are great.
Yeah.
And yeah, buy a lot of commercials. But yeah, I think the junket is probably a little bit of a relic.
It's interesting how... I mean, because there's still, I think there's still a whole class of people who make their money designing press tours for movies. And if you alter that in any way, they get so mad. Like, there's people getting fired and getting yelled at.
I'm sure that's like in place from the old studio system, you know? I'm sure the building where they plan the junkets now at Universal is the same building where they plan the junkets for, you know, Jaws.
Yeah.
So
it's just so strange.
I don't know if Jaws had a junket. That's that's probably incorrect, but
why not?
Probably.
Into the shark. They probably sent the shark around.
Sure.
You could have dressed as a shark to interview one of the cast members.
Sure.
Dreyfus.
I bet Richard Dreyfus is probably like a funny junket.
You think?
Maybe.
Never interviewed Dreyfus?
Never interviewed Dreyfus. No. What's the most recent Richard Dreyfus movie? He had that little cameo in Piranha 3D, I guess.
Yeah, that's the only one I can
think of.
Is
that the most recent Richard Dreyfus? If he died, would that be his last movie?
I don't know. I think he's probably one of those guys that's like partially retired where he doesn't have to do it anymore.
Sure. Yeah, he just lives in like Vermont or something.
Yeah. It's just so, it's so strangely nearsighted the way they do the advertising where they're... Well, just to give you an example, the other day, Sony released a trailer for Zero Dark Thirty that I don't think that was supposed to go live when it went live.
Yeah.
So it was like up on Yahoo, and I did like some funny screen caps of it with Jessica Chastain looking kind of funny, but it had like their Twitter hashtag on it. And then I realized as I was posting it that the video had gotten taken down.
Right.
And then I immediately, after I posted all these screen caps, got like all these like cease and desist letters from Sony, and I realized it was because like someone's job was to plan that Twitter hashtag campaign, and then someone else at Yahoo had like leaked the clip early, and then I'd screen capped all the clips, and then I like inadvertently made someone look bad for...
Right. Oh, I gotcha. So you were right. So a fuck up that Yahoo made, you were getting in trouble for.
Yeah, a fuck up that Yahoo made. That's that I'm weird. Sure someone was yelling at someone from Yahoo, and then Yahoo was like... Somehow it trickled down to me in like this really weird way.
Right.
And then, but then you take a step back and you're like, we're all kind of just advertising the movie here.
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, shouldn't their ultimate goal be just get as many eyes on the trailer as possible?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, but, you know, I think that's not even how it works. You know, I think that the junket people, the people who plan junkets and release clips, like, their pat on the back doesn't come when the box office comes in. Their pat on the back comes when they... You know, send an email to their bosses about how many impressions they got. You know,
it's
and how
one of those
much
jobs where a lot of the job involves justifying why there needs to be that job.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Totally. So yeah. So I think that you would be like, oh, as long as everyone sees this and the movie has a big opening weekend, shouldn't you be happy? But no, it's like that's a, it's just a different bar for success.
Look at these metrics. I put together so many PowerPoint presentations.
Right. There's
for you right now.
Influencers and early adopters and everybody's social media impressioning.
I made this graph of clout scores of the people that posted our hashtag.
Right.
It's trending upward, I got to tell you.
These people have gotten a lot of free headphones.
Yeah.
From their clout scores.
So what if, I mean, you work with UCB now and you do Jordan Jesse Go. Mm-hmm. What other stuff are you...
UCB
seems like a crazy cult, by the way. You guys are
It is. I mean, I think every improv theater has a cultish kind of fanboy culture surrounding
it. It's the cult
it.
That you, like, want to be in.
For
because
sure.
Because
yeah,
you guys are definitely the dominant
UCB
boys.
Has a little bit of a cool kid vibe to it. It has, like, you know, it's a little bit... Of the improv theaters, I think the culture is more like, you know, it's more, like, snarky writer than it is... you know, boisterous theater kid, which I think improv and sketch has been in the past. It's
right,
like,
yeah.
you know, someone who was also in Oklahoma, you know, in high school does improv. But I think UCB is like, oh, I was in a punk band in high school. And now I guess I'm doing comedy because comedy's the new punk rock. So that's a little more the vibe at UCB. But I mean, that you know, kind of it being a parody of itself occasionally aside, it's a great place in the, you know, hard pressed to find a place that has a bigger hit to miss ratio for its kind of nightly shows.
Right.
So.
And so.
So yeah, I do a monthly show there. I'm with a sketch group called Up. Okay. Last Wednesday of every month, and I just kind of wrapped shooting a web series for IGN for their premium YouTube channel called Game Shop.
Premium.
Yeah. You know, yeah, YouTube has that deal where they paid brands to make stuff that's YouTube only.
SB Nation's in on that too. I got a couple friends working over there.
So yeah, so I did Game Shop, and that was a you know, it's a Clerks in a Game Store is the elevator pitch for that. But it is a really funny show with some other people from UCB, and so that's what I'm pushing now.
Right. Well, that seems fun.
Yeah, it's very fun. yeah, I am sitting here currently with Grandpa Whitehair that you were kind enough not to mention when I came into your house.
I saw it, and well, I'm also colorblind, so I don't like...
Are you really colorblind?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, last night we were watching Perks of Being a Wallflower, and then in one of the scenes, like the
prank... And you thought it was a Tyler Perry movie.
Exactly. No, there's
one... So the whitest movies look like the blackest movies.
I have a very rare form of racial colorblindness. So in one of the
my
scenes,
favorite hip hop group Mumford and Sons.
There's one scene where the senior prank is Ezra Miller paints all the tools pink, and so he's like, and Ezra, and he did the best senior prank ever, and they just show a close up of all the tools in shop, and I'm like, I'm looking at my girlfriend, I'm like, what?
When did he do the tools?
What just happened?
Did he switch them around alphabetically?
And she's like, oh, they painted him pink.
Okay.
Darn. So you have your white hair.
Yeah. Here's a little spoiler for Game Shop fans. Our last episode takes place in the future. So we had to do a reshoot today of our future episode, and I came to the airport right from doing that reshoot, so my hair is Grandpa White.
Is it going to be that way for a while?
I think it'll wash out as soon as I get in the shower.
Okay.
But I have not got a chance to shower since we shot that scene.
Right on.
So
now, as a fellow curly-haired man, I have many stories of of ridicule.
Are you Jewish? And if not, do people ask you if you're Jewish all the time?
No,
Fitz Mancini, are you Jewish? I could probably just have thought of your last name.
Well, I think
I answered that question.
I'm part of a there's a certain subset of Italians with Jewy hair, like me and Carola, and I'm sure there's others of us around. But yeah, no, I have been asked if I was Jewish by people who don't know my name usually.
Right.
Actually, in New York, I didn't know what that Sukkot or Sukkah, what is that holiday? There's some weird holiday where the Orthodox Jews have like sort of a some sort of tent and like an ear of corn that they pass around.
It's their Halloween substitute, right? Yeah. And you dress up like characters from the Torah.
Yeah, it's the strangest
thing. I was only recently made aware of that, but I don't know the name of it or anything else about it.
Yeah, so I do remember coming out of the subway near Columbia, and someone trying to handing me an ear of corn, and asking me if
it
I
to
was
the ground.
I was very confused.
Yeah,
like, oh, are you Jewish? I was like, oh, no.
But
anyway, I've got,
give me back my corn. Then this is for Jews only.
This is the Jew corn.
This is Jew corn.
Now, in my childhood, I'm trying to remember some of the best curly hair insults I got, because I compiled them and they're really funny to me now.
Okay.
Like, my nickname in basketball was DNA because I had fucked up DNA because some of my hair was curly and some of it was straight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then...
That's kind of cool, though.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed the humor.
Here comes DNA!
This guy's got fucked up DNA.
Hey, double helix!
It's just like a... Such a very specific burn.
Yeah.
Also, I got... Maybe you should just shave it off and see if it grows back normal.
Maybe call me Brillo Pad in high school. Mm-hmm. Brillo Pad was a popular one. Yeah, people say I look like Jack Osborne a lot, which I think I maybe do a little bit. Yeah, that's about as bad as it got for me, though.
You look like Jack Oswald.
Right, yeah, a combination of Patton Oswalt and Jack Osborne.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
That's way less bad than any of mine.
I think DNA's cool. I think you should run with it.
Yeah. I'll go with that.
Yeah.
It's not the worst thing. Oh, poodle. I got called poodle dog.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think I maybe got poodle a couple times, too. Uh-huh. But I think I got called poodle kind of semi-affectionately from, like, girls. And I was part of me was insulted, but part of me also wanted to keep talking to the girl. So I think I fucking went with it, you know?
And then I felt like I got the gay thing. I got called gay and stuff for having curly hair. And then I realized how much it had affected me, because in the elevator, going down my elevator one day,
you just feel compelled to suck cocks.
Oh, yeah, exactly. This guy was there, and I just unzipped.
Well, people called me gay in high school.
What am I doing?
Yeah.
Now, there's this neighbor I have that has this poodle, and I've seen her. I've been in the elevator with the poodle for, like, you know, 6-7 times. And then she said, "Here, boy." And I realized this whole time I just assumed the poodle was a girl because it had curly hair.
Oh, yeah, sure. I guess it's maybe you are emasculating that poodle.
I know. And I was like, man, poodle, I know how you feel.
It's so funny when people correct you on the gender of their pets. Mm-hmm. Like, I know people with, like, babies, you know, you'll see, like, an androgynous onesie baby. And you'll be like, oh, what's her name? It's a him. I guess I get that about a kid. But when people get like that about their pets, I just want to say, like, take a look at your life. Look at your...
I never know whether...
I'm sorry I didn't look at your dog's balls. Sorry I didn't look to see if your dog had a fucking pink erection.
But from the other side of that, I never know whether to correct people, because people do call my dog Bennett a girl quite a bit. And I usually don't correct them because I don't care. But then... But then when
your pet's fixed, I mean, their gender is even less important.
That's true. That's true. But then when I call him after they've been referring to him as a girl for 5 minutes, I feel like I wonder if I've somehow betrayed them. Like, they feel embarrassed. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think here's what I think. I think that, like, if it's just like stranger on the street, stranger in an elevator, mm-hmm. hey, girl, you let that slide. But I think if you're with someone for a period of time and they keep gendering your dog, you can politely correct
them. If our dogs are, like, playing together or something like that.
Like, oh, but it's actually a boy. Okay. I think you can politely say that. But when someone, like, snaps when you get it wrong, as if you're insulting their pet.
Oh, I have gotten the one where...
Also, it doesn't matter for a baby either, by the way, I'll say.
Yeah, no.
I get that a little bit more, but come on. Fucking...
Just be happy we're not sexualizing your baby yet.
Right, yeah.
I've gotten the one where one of my neighbors has... a special needs dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, you don't have to call it a special needs dog. It's a dog. You could probably just say retarded. The dog's not going to get offended.
What's the dog retarded? What is it? What's wrong with it?
I don't know.
The dog has special needs.
It's like autistic or something. Okay. I don't know.
Sure.
It's really good at math.
It has to have an odd number of food pellets
exactly.
in its bowl.
Well, if you spill it, it can count them all.
Right.
He can't.
He just barks the amount of pellets.
Yeah, it's hard to interpret how he knows, but he knows.
Right. And he has to watch Judge Wapner every night.
Isn't it weird that the mayor of New York had a judge show?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Ed Koch.
But after he was the mayor.
Yeah,
yeah.
But still.
That is weird. Totally.
Yeah,
that's like a weird, like, European politician. I was reading something about politics in Greece, mm-hmm. and, like, the most powerful liberal in Greece was, like, people called her the Grecian Oprah. It's like, I like that idea that, like, entertainers just become politicians in foreign countries. I guess we've had it a couple of times.
Yeah.
I guess Schwarzenegger and Reagan.
Yeah.
But there aren't Jesse Ventura. There's, like, a handful of examples, but it seems like every foreign politician was also a pop singer or, you know, yeah, like...
On, soccer team
owner. Or, yeah, a soccer, yeah.
Have you ever interviewed Jesse Ventura?
I know. I never have. Uh-uh. Oh, man. Have you?
No. I would be fascinated by it.
Because he's like a big conspiracy theory guy, isn't he?
Yeah. Have you seen his show at all?
No.
It's completely insane.
What is it?
It's like about conspiracy theories.
Okay.
But like it's structured in such a way that like there'll be this conspiracy theory that's been out there floating for like 50 years.
Sure.
And it'll be Jesse Ventura just hearing about it on the phone. He's like, we need to get on a plane.
Apparently there's alligators in the sewers of New York.
Yeah, it's seriously
like, you know, that's kind of an old one.
No, he'll be talking to his operatives and they'll be like on a private jet and they'll make it out.
What channel is this on?
What is it on? It's somewhere deep in the cables.
I'm sure. The
cable channels.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
That's hilarious. Apparently the pyramid on the dollar sign is for the Illuminati.
What you're saying is that the Da Vinci is making a W, and that stands. I got it. And then he'll be on his private jet, and then
he'll hop on the jet.
Yeah,
that's great.
Are you saying the Bilderberg Group is affecting food prices?
He should get Carl Weathers to help him. They should maybe have a little Predator reunion.
Oh,
Carl Weathers helps him track down, various Illuminati figures. Man.
I think you got something there. You should pitch that back to Fuel.
I think Carl. Yeah. Hey, Fuel, I know you fired me, and I know you only want MMA material, but hear
close.
Me out. Yeah, Jesse Ventura was a wrestler.
There's overlap in that Venn diagram.
Sure, totally.
Yeah.
Carl, Predator, I mean, what's that? But an intergalactic round of MMA.
Oh. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Now I know why I like it all these years.
Can I just bring up a random film thing? Would you mind? Because I've been wanting to talk to somebody about this.
Okay. Please.
And I think you'll appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that the Universal Soldier movies have an incredibly complicated continuity?
I should know this because I just interviewed the director of the new one.
Like, have you seen it?
2 weeks ago. I haven't yet.
Some buddies of mine went to see it and I was busy and I've been kicking myself ever since. But it got me on a little kick, them inviting me to see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, my first thought was, they're still making those?
Yeah.
And then I like, oh, I should look into it. And I'm like, oh, good. The timeline is complicated. I just love shit like that when like a continuity gets complicated.
Yeah.
Here's what happens. There's three different timelines, but they all suppose in every timeline, the first movie is canonical,
mm-hmm.
but they all branch out from that first Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren one.
Right. And now they're back, but they have to explain. I mean, Van Damme and Lundgren are back.
Yeah.
And they have to explain how they were gone for however many movies they were gone for.
Is that they don't, mm-hmm. apparently. Apparently there were two movies, there were two direct-to-DVD movies after the first one.
Right.
They fucking, and then Van Damme and Lundgren came back for another one and said fuck it to those other movies and made a sequel that supposes that one didn't happen. They suppose those two movies didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
That movie was not successful. So they said fuck it again and supposed that other movie didn't happen. And now they've made two sequels.
Double reboot.
But not a reboot, because they all suppose the first one happened.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know what you call that.
All three of those things branch out from that first one.
Wow.
Isn't that nuts?
I need an infographic.
Who cares about Universal Soldier that much? I am now the person who cares the most about it.
Yeah. Well, isn't the same thing? It's the same thing with the Fast and the Furious, too, right? And didn't Diesel die before Tokyo Drift or
something? Would you like me to explain the Fast and Furious continuity to you? Okay. Here's what happens. Tokyo Drift is the last movie in the series. The Fast and the Furious and Fast Five happen before Tokyo Drift.
Okay.
So characters that die in Tokyo Drift are in the Fast and Furious and Fast Five, and they make little allusions to their death.
Okay.
So what they are doing now is filling in the blanks between Too Fast, Too Furious and Tokyo Drift. So there was a period
necessary.
Of time between those.
Yeah.
And what they're doing now with the Fast and the Furious, Fast 5, and Fast 6 soon is they are filling in the gaps between those movies.
Thank God.
Someone marry me, by the way. I will make a wonderful husband. I will fucking talk your ear off about this shit.
You guys, he's got the graph paper out. He's
I have
drawing
graph
it.
Paper.
He's drawing it.
Afterward,
he's got
yes.
a protractor. I don't know.
Afterwards, after sex, we can talk about the Zelda timeline. Which is also very complicated.
You know what no one ever talks about in about Fast Five?
Hmm.
The Korean guy, his name was Han Sol, like Seoul, Korea.
Yeah.
O-H. Han Solo.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And it appears on a screen in the movie where it says Han Solo.
And no one makes a joke about that.
No one really references it. It's not talked about.
That seems like a mistake.
I pointed this out. No one...
George Lucas is pretty litigious, though. So maybe they... Ooh. Maybe there's a cut scene or something that fucking Lucas put the kibosh on.
Yeah.
Or now Disney put the kibosh on, probably.
I like the silly names that are never addressed. We had the same thing with Over the Top. Because in Over the Top, I can't remember what Stallone's first name is, but his last name's Hawk.
Okay.
And his son has gone to live with his wife, and he's taken his wife's last name, which is like an insult to Stallone. Oh. But his son is named Mike.
Uh-huh.
Now, at the end of the movie, it sort of ends with the kid taking Stallone's name
I'm taking
name back.
Mom's last name, Hunt.
Yeah, exactly. And I just wish there was some scene of him running, you know, towards his father and saying, I'm Mike Hawk.
I'm Mike Hawk.
They get a big hug, again. You know, maybe like an 80s.
Good to have you back, Mike Hawk. I'm so glad you're not my cunt anymore.
Perfect.
The audience laughs.
So much applause. There would be
rapturous
standing ovation
applause
in the theater.
Hmm.
All right, well, I think we got to shut this down so we can get to our show.
Oh, yeah. What time is it now?
7:15.
Oh, great. Plenty of time.
Yeah. Yeah, so what's the when you visit new towns, do you just sort of try and get some stage time around or
Yeah, I mean that's kind of stand up's a little bit of a new thing for me, mm-hmm. but so
I was
going
to ask you about that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm doing a little more stand up these days. It's tricky because Jesse recently had a kid. Mm-hmm. His wife had a kid. And he is the father to that kid and is in charge of its care.
Whew, we dodged a bullet there.
So he's not keen on taking the show on the road as much as he once was. Mm-hmm. But I still kind of like going around and doing shows. So stand up was kind of a fun thing for me to take up because I can kind of get out there a little bit more. So yeah.
So you sort of started an improv, and then had you done? I mean, when did you start doing just straight stand up? That wasn't
you know,
improv
I did a little
based.
Bit in college, uh-huh. and then when I got to LA. You know, the kind of hustle of show business made, ironically, the hustle of show business kind of made going to open mics and stuff very hard. So mm-hmm. I kind of put it down. And this year, now that I don't have my job at Fuel TV because of MMA, bringing it all back.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. My evenings are a little bit more free. So I've been kind of poking around with stand up a little bit this year. And it's been fun.
How many nights are you going to open mics?
Not enough. Not enough to get good at it. I probably still don't have the chutzpah to get really great at it. But I should be going to more. But I do one or two a week.
Well, it's so hard to judge because I mean, like, most of the comics you meet are. I go seven nights a week and I do four.
Fucking drive across town, do another one. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. No, and you know, I have all the respect in the world for stand-up comedy, and I think that's what you have to do to get good at it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's natural talent, but then there's just like fucking put in the work, do it a lot, get good, make sure those jokes work. And yeah, I think I probably am maybe a little too old for that.
Yeah.
But I like doing it once in a while.
Yeah. All right. Well, that sounds like the boat I'm in, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to compete.
It's tough
with
when
a
you're like successful in another area.
Exactly.
You know, where like your eggs are not all in that basket.
Yeah. You're like, oh, should I go write something that I get paid for, or should I go and just hope this thing that I'm not getting paid for and doing 4 hours a night,
yeah,
is going to eventually become.
Yeah, I definitely spent my early 20s doing sketch and improv.
Yeah.
And so I think that's maybe where my, you know, where my core skill set lies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway.
I mean, it's such a weird thing, too.
What I'm saying is I'm going to ruin the show you booked me on because I'm bad.
It's not even my show, man. I just talked to the guy who books it.
Oh, thank you. That was nice of you.
I try to book as few shows myself as possible just to keep, you know, keep the workload down.
Sure. You don't want to do too much work. You don't want to do too much work.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this sort of broadcast extra interview.
Yeah. Bonus.
And thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boom. All right. Done.